Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. Joining me as ever is Oriol Puigdemont, Motorsport.com's MotoGP global editor, and it is a new season. 2020 is upon us, and aside from all the on-track action we're about to witness, I think off-track is where it's really going to get interesting, because of course at the end of this year all factory contracts pretty much are up for grabs, which means we are going to be in for a fairly hectic, silly season. So Yuri, first of all, Happy New Year.
Thank you.
We had a pretty mental end to last year with Alex Marquez to Honda, Lorenzo retiring, all the KTM business, Zarco to Aventia. That has me quite worried that this year is going to be even more mad, because there is a lot of big moves coming up.
Yeah, as you said, I think that we didn't expect this last-minute moves. So first of all, I think that for next year we will have to wait and see what happened with the 46 with Valentino, because I think everybody will wait until he makes a decision and he decides either to stay and sign one more year or two more years, or he decides to say, okay, enough, and then he retires.
Yeah, I mean, Rossi's obviously the big one coming into this year. Over the winter, past couple of weeks, we had comments from him saying that I would be open to a switch to the Petronas Sepang Racing team. The more that you think about it, is probably a win-win situation for Yamaha, because they want Quartararo, but they'd quite like to keep Rossi. Obviously, Morbidelli is probably a safe bet to keep his ride within the Yamaha fold. And you'd have to think Yamaha will push really hard for Vinales. So that would be quite a neat way to tie up things for Yamaha if Rossi was open to that switch.
I think that, again, the point is that we will have to wait and see what happened with this test rider slot, because I think it can... shake a bit the situation inside Yamaha. And then let's see how Yamaha manages the politics inside the team. Because, we've been talking for a few weeks and months already about what Yamaha is going to do. If they are going to go for the fastest possible couple, or they're gonna try to keep Valentino as long as possible, and then they will have to choose Valentino's partner, Valentino's teammate. So I think it might, or it can change the it can mix a bit the things inside Yamaha, because at that time you never know. Yamaha has already said that they're gonna wait for Valentino, so the decision is done.
Rossi said he wants to wait for the first few races to see where he's at, which is in line with what he said the last time this situation came up for him at the beginning of 2017, I think. That makes sense. We talked about this before, as you mentioned, that there's, from Yamaha's point of view, keeping Rossi, from a marketing point of view, is obviously a very big thing for them. But at the same point, they know that Vinales is going to be sought after. They know that Quartararo is going to be sought after. It seems like they are in a slightly tricky situation, in that they want to wait for Rossi, but they also, in some sense, can't wait for him too long, because they run the risk of losing two really fast riders.
Yeah,
potentially.
Yes, but I don't see Quartararo going anywhere else, to be honest. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that, considering what all the message Yamaha has sent to him, I think he has really clear idea that Yamaha is looking for him to stay, but to step up to the factory team. While Vinales is not the story, because the message sent from Yamaha to him are completely opposite to the message they've sent to Fabio. So I would say that at the moment, Maverick is trying to analyzing the different options, while Fabio is, yeah, playing the game as well, but at the same time, mm-hmm. I think he's more focused. His main idea is to step up to the factory team.
There has been some rumors over the winter about Fabio and contract negotiations, you know, money that he demanded for the Sepang 8 hours, all of which, you know, rumors, we can't say anything, but it does sound like Fabio already does have quite a lot of power within Yamaha. He knows how much he's valued.
He has proved that. So nothing else to add. I mean, behind Maverick, he's been the fastest Yamaha, especially in the second half of the season. Don't forget that he's a rookie. So he has a lot of margin to grow. And then I would say that Yamaha has done really and very strange things over the last years, but I would say that losing Fabio would be the most stupid thing for Yamaha to do. I would put it that way.
I definitely agree with that. Let's go to Vinales for a minute, because you talked about this a little bit before, is that he could be an option for Ducati. You have to think that Ducati is going to go for a completely new lineup for 2021. I think they've reached the maximum potential of Dovizioso and Petrucci. I believe.
I would say Dobby at the moment, because with Petrucci, I would say that how do you call that? It is a one hit wonder. Or
one hit wonder. Yeah.
So yeah. until now. Don't get me wrong, full respect for all the riders, but he didn't get the expectations. It's not me saying that, it's Ducati saying that, mm-hmm. and even Danilo saying that. So I would say that the main question mark is what's going to happen with Dobby. At the same time, we all know that Dobby is not the youngest guy rider on the grid, so maybe his target has changed over the last last year and then the coming years. So it would be interesting. I would say that there are many manufacturers that can be interested on signing an experienced rider like Dobby. So we have KTM, we have different brands. Even I know that it's a bit different, but I think that Dobby can offer a really, really interesting feedback and insight and experience to different manufacturers.
Yeah, I mean, that is a good point about Dovizioso, is that although maybe his window for winning a championship he's missed, but he is still quick. He's still able to beat Marquez on a really good day. You know, he has a lot, as you say, a lot of experience. And, you know, a team like perhaps Suzuki, maybe even Aprilia, you know, someone a bit out the box could think, well, if we get Piaggio behind us, give us a bit of money.
Yeah, but I don't see Dobby signing. I don't see Dobby taking the route than, for example, Giannone took, you know?
So
I don't see this happening, because I would say that Dobby only, maybe I'm wrong, I would say that Dobby will take a decision knowing that is the best option for him. So at the moment, Aprilia can never be the best decision for him.
Yeah, of course.
For any rider at his level.
That's fair enough. Of course, there is a potential that Aprilia could take a step forward this year, brand new bike. We'll get to Aprilia in a bit, because it's quite an interesting situation developed over the winter. The thing with Dovi that sort of, I don't know if concerns me is the right word, but I think that might perhaps sway his decision, is the fact that he is a family man. And, you know, the calendar is not getting any smaller. We're going to go to 21 races in 2021, 22 by 22. You know, that's a lot of travel for someone reaching the end of his career. you know, it might just, that might sway his decision that he thinks, well, maybe I've done all I can do. I want to go spend time with my family.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't see that a problem, considering that Valentino aside, we all know that Dobby is not going to race forever. So I wouldn't say, I mean, they are very well paid. So,
well, yeah, I mean, there is that.
So I would say that as long as they can sign good contracts, they all know that they are not going to race forever. So it is good to, yeah, to get the most of it and try to sign as best contracts possible. So I don't see that the calendar being longer and longer. It is the main issue for Dobby. I would say that maybe the pressure, maybe the feeling of, I don't know, not being listened, yeah, or Ducati not taking him 100% seriously on his comments, the way the bike has to be developed, these kind of things are much more important than the calendar.
Another rider that will be on Ducati's radar, well, there's two riders really that sort of, well, there's one that will definitely be on Ducati's radar and one that thinks he'll be on Ducati's radar. We'll talk about Jack Miller first. That's the kind of the big interesting one, because for me personally, I think the whole business in Austria last year with Lorenzo and Pramac, I think has almost pushed Jack Miller to the door. As much, whatever comments he makes about not being bothered about it, I think honestly Ducati would have to come with a really, really big offer to keep him, because I think other manufacturers will come for Miller.
Well, first of all, as I see the scenario, I would say that Ducati first has to think about the future and has to decide which way to go. If they definitely want to challenge Mark and Honda, they have to make a switch. They have to change the approach. They have to invest much more money and to make the things different, like what they did by signing Lorenzo. I mean, I'm not saying that it was, you know, but similar thing. Yeah. You have to change the approach and do something different, because to be, I mean, I don't see Ducati beating the current, I mean, couple, Honda and Mark, by taking Jack Miller, to be honest. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that Miller is, but we all know Jack Miller. We all know the potential of Jack Miller. He's a race winner. He is, you know, but we are not talking about that. If Ducati is happy by fighting for 2, 3, 4 race wins a year, it's good. But if they definitely want to try to be a title contender, they need to do something. They need to invest much more money. They have to convince Audi to invest much more money on the project, on the MotoGP project, and they need to sign the best, I mean, the fastest rider possible.
The other rider that thinks he has a shot at Ducati, and we've touched on this before the new year, we don't think it's quite realistic, is Johann Zarco. Of course, going to be on the Aventia Ducati this year. He has aspirations of being in the factory team, but we know he's a talented rider, but would you really take a risk in putting him on a factory surrounding again after what happened last year?
I think that for Johann, for Zarco, there's only one way. It's time to deliver. End of the story. I mean, time to deliver. He has to prove that he's good enough, not only for being a factory rider, but being in a MotoGP bike, as he is not a pay rider. So he has to deliver. End of the story. And stop talking and start delivering. I would put it that definitely way, because for me, it is, he's been very lucky He's been very lucky. Yeah, after what he said in the last race of the calendar of Abindia, you can think that, but you cannot say that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that'll be end of part one of our 2021 silly season predictions. Join us again after the break. We'll be discussing Aprilia and, of course, Andrea Iannone. Welcome back to this week's Tank Slappers podcast, the first episode of the new year. And as I mentioned, we'll talk about Andrea Iannone. It's a sort of Italian-shaped elephant in the room because of over the winter he was handed an FIM doping ban for an anabolic steroid. Innocent until proven guilty. Testing's coming up fast. The relationship between Iannone and Aprilia isn't the best to begin with. I remember the Jerez test, the final day, Iannone turned up to talk to the cameras, not in team gear, and Romano Alessandro gave him the dirtiest look I've ever seen anyone give anyone. It kind of seems that relationship is over.
I don't know, but I would say that this is what Aprilia deserves. Yeah. I mean, okay. I'm going to be 100% clear. I mean, I don't understand. I don't really understand how anybody from Aprilia has decided to sign Iannone after his performance in Suzuki. I don't understand. Yeah, I mean, we all know each other in the paddock. So it was as simple as go to Suzuki, anybody on Suzuki, and ask 5 minutes conversation.
Yeah.
Even two.
Yeah.
End of the story. So to me, I think I'm not talking about I would say strange or doping suspect that we all have. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about his performance over the last year and his quotes, his
attitude.
Exactly. So to me, this is exactly what Aprilia deserves. End of the story.
The decision to sign Iannone was an odd one, given that they had a good rider in Scott Redden. Yeah, Scott didn't have a great first season on the Aprilia, but he didn't really have time to adapt to the bike before he was kicked to the curb. You have to think sticking with Scott would have been just a no-brainer situation, or even taking a punt on a rookie, you know, someone from Moto2, someone a top-line Moto2 rider.
To be honest.
Anyone other than Iannone.
To be honest, I see Scott Redding much happier now than three years ago by all decisions he has taken over the last 2 years. Yeah, I've seen him much happier now than then.
Mm. Of course, that leaves we think that there might be a seat open at Aprilia for this year. Two names spring to mind. First is Bradley Smith, the obvious choice. But another name that's kind of popped up for at least for the Sepang test is Carol Abraham, which makes sense, actually, if you think about it. A guy with race experience. I can't imagine him, you know, being a fairly expensive option.
Do you want me to see even harder than with the Iannone question? So, no, I mean, it again, same as Ducati, okay? But in a much lower profile. So by this decision, we all find out what's the target for Aprilia. You know?
Mm.
So if you take Karel Abraham, it's all set already. It's already said, yeah.
Fair enough.
I mean, that's what it is. I'm not disrespecting, but okay, if you are a factory
and
we all know what they're going to do with Abraham as... Mm-hmm. So why trying to... No. It is what it is. So if you are taking Karel Abraham, you have a purpose. You have a reason. So end of the story. So what would you think that Aleix Espargaró will think if they taking Abraham?
I can imagine it would be quite sweary is what...
But at the same time, it can be frustrating
just
for him.
So,
okay, I'm going to ride a bike, but nobody's going to push me. And then I will do my best, but it's not the same.
Yeah, well, he has been sort of, he's been unfair with, he's been unfairly partnered, I would say. You know, and he's not been a great teammate. You know, Scott didn't have the experience of the Aprilia. Sam Lowes was a rookie, you know, and Aleix was a rookie on the Aprilia. That, or an Aprilia
that's
rookie.
What I mean. I mean, you have a factory bike. Yeah. Okay, is the probably the worst factory bike on the grid, but still,
yeah.
There's a factory, there's a brand. So you have to take your responsibility on your decisions. So you're representing a huge brand.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
What do you think? I mean, by taking Karel Abraham. I mean, don't get me wrong, but we all know Karel.
Yeah.
We all know what he's able, and we all know what he can offer. So it will show what Yamaha's plans or approach for the future.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Aprilia one is an interesting situation, but looking ahead to the future, because they have talked about a completely new bike. I wrote about this earlier last year. It sounds like they've already pissed off Aleix by not developing the current bike to a point that he thought was necessary. And I kind of think if they lose Aleix, then the whole project falls on its arse, because Aleix Espargaró is the only thing giving Aprilia credibility right now. Aleix Espargaró and Massimo Rivola are the only two things giving that project credibility right
100%.
Now.
100% agree. So, yeah, I mean, but again, I mean, it's not an easy way and an easy decision for Aleix, because there are no many bikes available on the MotoGP grid. So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting.
Suzuki's another one that's going to be interesting, because, of course, riders aside, what we want to know is, are they going to have a satellite team in 2021? Which is the key sort of question that crops up every year.
I think so. I think now it's closer than ever. But let's see what happened with the team, because, they have a few engineers leaving the team last winter. So, yeah, they have to reorganize a bit the structure. And then let's see what happened with the riders, because I think last summer, Rins, both riders, but especially Rins, was very close to renew the contract. But in the end, I mean, at the end, the negotiations stopped, get stuck at some point. So let's see how they start talking again, and let's see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, from logically, keeping Mir and Rins is almost a no-brainer for Suzuki if they can't get a big name. Both,
I think that
was too good, right?
We have to expect a step forward from Mir next year. He said that he's working on the smoothness, which is the key for going faster with that bike. So he's been all the year a bit overriding the GSX. So I think that we can expect a step forward from Mir. And for Alex, I think that he has to establish himself on the top of the standings and being there more often. That's the target for him.
Yeah, for sure. KTM, I think KTM might possibly be the most interesting team to look for, because, of course, they come into this silly season off the back of a really bad experience with Johann Zarco, with the fact that he couldn't ride that bike. And that might scare away some potential riders that they'd want to sign. You have to think Paul's going to be priority.
100%.
But then, you know, you think Miguel Oliveira will be in there, but Miguel Oliveira sounds a little bit frustrated with KTM after the whole Brad Binder
business. Yeah, but I'm very excited, and I'm very looking forward to see what Brad Binder is able to do with that bike.
Brad's proven to be one of the most under the radar talents in Grand Prix racing. He's been just consistently quick the whole time, but without being sort of in your face about it, if you know what I mean. He's just always been there.
Yeah.
And I think a MotoGP bike, yeah, it'd be really good. But KTM, within clear KTM's path now is that they want to develop all their own talent. They want to bring riders into Tech 3 and bring them up.
Yeah, but first of all, they need to develop the bike. I mean, they need to do the bike more suitable to any kind of rider. So that's the key. So the current, this KTM is very difficult to control. So they need to make the bike much more, the build the new bike a bit more suitable.
Yeah. Oh, there was some interesting sort of, there was flashes of that at the tests last November, especially I think Valencia. After Paul crashed, he said he jumped back on the bike and within two laps he was already matching Marc Marquez's times, which is, we know that KTM's a good bike over a single lap.
Let's see what happened in Japan, because I think it will be very interesting see. The things will be much more in place in Japan and especially in Qatar.
Yeah, definitely. Finally, I mean, the one we've kind of not talked about, we do need to mention Honda. We think that Honda signing Alex Marquez has pretty much secured Marc Marquez for 2021.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's, to me, it's done already. They have, just to wait for the announcement to be done, but I think it's signed and decided.
Just quickly on Alex, of course, it's a high pressure situation he goes into, but at the same point, there's also not a lot of pressure on him in a sense, because he's kind of got nothing to lose in a way. But also, you've written some things about this, which is interesting, is that how much of a distraction will Alex be for Mark in terms of if he struggles on the bike? That's the big thing that everyone will be looking for.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think it is a huge pressure, but at the same time, it can be a huge opportunity for him. It is a huge opportunity, a big opportunity for Alex to deliver. Now it's, I mean, I don't know how to say it. It's one way or the opposite. I mean, he has a really good opportunity, but at the same time, with a lot of pressure. So now we are all going to see which kind of rider Alex is.
Give me your wildest silly season prediction for the 2021. Give us the biggest thing you think will happen.
In terms of
rider moves or rider retirement, what do you think? What do you think is going to be the big thing that will really shock us?
I don't know. I'm very interested on see what Valentino does, after what Valentino decides, what Yamaha is going to do, because I think it's the most... Ducati as well, but to me, I think it will be very interesting to see what happened with Yamaha next year.
And on that note, I think we'll call time on this week's podcast there. Thank you very much, Yuri, for your time, and thank you, the listeners, for joining us for the first of what will be many, many Tank Slappers podcasts this year. Of course, you can go back and listen to all of our episodes from last year, including a couple of special episodes we recorded with TT legend John McGuinness and road racing dominator Peter Hickman. You could find those on iTunes via Apple Podcasts. You can find them on Google Podcasts. You can find us on Spotify as well. Just search for Tank Slappers. We will be back very soon for more two-wheel chat. But until then, it is a very warm goodbye.